You're tuned in to the Kojo Nandi Show on WAMU 88.5. Welcome. Later in the broadcast, we'll look at how Washington's dining scene may be reflecting economic and racial inequity. But first, we're in the middle of summer break, and young people experience learning loss over summer break, a phenomenon known as summer slide. Kids generally come back from the break at times significantly farther behind where they were at the end of the previous school year. And summer slide impacts youth from lower income families at higher rates than others. Is the answer a shorter summer break or getting rid of the summer break altogether? Today we're talking about ways to combat summer slide and keep young people intellectually engaged over the summer. Joining me in studio is Kate McGee. She's an education reporter for WAMU 88.5. Kate, thank you for joining us.
Great to be here.
What exactly is summer slide and how big a problem is it with youth in this region?
So it is this tendency for students in the summer break, once school is out, to lose academic skills and forget what they've learned during the summer months if they're not practicing or reinforcing the skills that they've learned over the years, or if their parents don't have time to sit down and help them read or help them with those skills. And that's why sometimes we tend to see this in lower income communities where parents might be working and don't have that time. And that can contribute to the achievement gap. You know, decades of research has shown that the summer slide during that time, low-income students can lose 2 months of math skills and 2 to 3 months of reading skills. And so they're coming back to school in the fall. They're a little behind, and teachers are having to play catch up for, you know, the first month and a half of school, getting kids back up to speed. And so a lot of schools with high stakes testing and pushes to close the achievement gap in schools are looking at these 2 to 3 months and saying, this is an opportunity for us to keep kids engaged and make sure that they're coming back to the next school year still involved.
A number of D.C. public schools are experimenting with an extended school year for the first time this summer, expanding the academic year from 180 to 200 days. Why are they doing that, and how did they determine which schools should have an extended year?
So they extended it to nearly a dozen schools. It was predominantly based on leadership at the school, if there was a strong leadership there to implement this kind of change, because it requires buy-in from teachers to, you know, work an extra month of school to plan for that as well. And it was also schools that were struggling academically. Most of the schools were east of the river, elementary and middle schools. And so they decided to do this because exactly of summer slide. DCPS was testing students and finding that they were scoring higher at the end of the year than they were at the beginning of the following year. And so they wanted to see if extending that school year and keeping kids continuing to learn through the summer would help with achievement scores.
And all of those 10 schools, is my understanding, are east of the river in Ward 7 and 8?
Yes, I think nearly all of them. There might be one
that's not technically east of the river.
Yes.
If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call at 800-433-8850. Are you a parent? How do you keep your kids intellectually engaged and interested over the summer? 800-433-8850. You can send email to kojo@wamu.org. Shoot us a tweet at Kojo Show or go to our website, kojoshow.org. Join the conversation there. Kate, if the extended school year turns out to be successful in those 10 schools in D.C. this year, how likely is it that other schools in the district will follow their lead?
Well, DCPS says that they're still kind of monitoring the system and there's no plans to expand that. I think that if schools, other campuses that are similar to those who have the extended year program, if they see that this is working for those campuses and this, you know, test scores are increasing and children seem to be working well in that system, maybe then the conversation would push for that at their own campus.
Meanwhile, in Maryland, Governor Larry Hogan has extended the summer break so that it ends after Labor Day. What was his reasoning for that, and what has the reaction been from parents, teachers' unions, and young people themselves?
So last August, Governor Hogan announced this extension. Schools had to, you know, start after Labor Day and had to end by June 15th, keeping the 180-day calendar within that time frame. And his argument was that it would be better for businesses, the tourism industry, that students needed a break and that families should be able to have a summer vacation that, you know, traditionally ends after Labor Day, and that he would even, you know, save money by not having kids in schools, that, you know, and not having to run air conditioning in the summer. school districts, majority of school districts and, you know, Board of Education leaders in the state were against this. It makes it harder to plan a school year around professional development days and, you know, if possible, inclement weather. School districts were now tasked with kind of figuring out how to include all 180 days within that time frame. And a lot of those days, professional development days, you know, are good for teachers. It's planning time. It's time for them to develop professionally. And so the teachers' unions were also upset with that move. But polls showed the majority of Marylanders did support that change. Most of the arguments came from more urban areas, lower income areas, where you know, people were concerned about summer slide and concerned about now that there was this large gap that students would not be in school during the summer. And it meant, you know, finding extended daycare for families who, you know, were working and couldn't and had now had to figure out a way to keep their kids.
Didn't get any arguments from Ocean City, did it?
No.
We're talking about summer slide and combating education loss in the summer. We've been talking with Kate McGee. She's an education reporter for WAMU 88.5. Also joining me in studio is Megan O'Connor. She is assistant director for programs and partnerships for D.C. Public Libraries. Megan, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Koja.
And Mike DeMarco. He is chief of programs for the organization Higher Achievement. Mike, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Mike, summer slides affect low-income youth more than higher-income youth. Kate talked about how the fact that their parents still have to work may be affecting those youth. But what other reasons might there be?
So when we look at families that are able to pay for summer programming, the average cost of families who pay is $288 a week. And that's onerous for a lot of families and impossible for even more. And so as a result, that results in a lot of kids, particularly from lower income families, who are unable to access those opportunities and therefore have unstructured time during the summer, which can lead to a lot of things, both summer learning loss as well as summer weight gain is a huge challenge that we see in these communities.
Megan, given those challenges, do you have suggestions for resources that those parents can access to put summer programming in reach of their kids?
Absolutely. Public libraries have been in the summer learning game for an awfully long time. The most traditional way is by offering a reading incentive program, which many grown-ups participated in when they were kids. And it's simply keep reading, and if you read, we're going to reward you. At the D.C. Public Library, we're happy to partner with the Washington Nationals so youth can win tickets to baseball games. In addition to our reading incentive programming, we offer educational and informative programming at all of our library locations across the city so that every child in the district can have access to educational opportunities all summer long.
Is there a difference between how you approach working with young people in the summer versus how you work with them during the school year?
Well, public libraries are always focused on something that we like to call joyous discovery, where we're absolutely supporting academic skills, but finding that next book that's going to inspire a love of ancient Egypt or reptiles, that's going to set you down a path of discovery about something you're really passionate about, has always been part of what public libraries are about, the love of reading. And our educational programming is the same. So while we work with organizations like the American Association for the Advancement of Science to bring great STEM and STEAM programs into our libraries, we also work with local organizations such as Words, Beats, and Life, who are bringing hip-hop artists in to help educate kids on graffiti art and music production.
800-433-8850. With one of my kids, it was reptiles. That kept him engaged, it seemed like, for decades, but that's another story. Are you an educator, librarian, or camp counselor? Do you approach education and youth programming differently over the summer than during the school year? 800-433-8850. I'd like to go to Tom in Rockville. Tom, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Koja, big fan. I wanted to address what you made, the comments you made at the very, very beginning of the show,
yes,
where you said that it might be a solution to the whole summer slide thing to shorten the summer break or just to take it all together.
Yep.
Right. So, yeah, I just like to, like, I mean, I've recently graduated from high school, and I've done a lot of work with the Board of Education and the student member of the board, and I've noticed that when it comes to the summer and when it comes to people, like, retention not being something that's high, I think that a big problem is the way that we're teaching kids and what we're teaching them. I think that what we don't do and what we should do is catering specifically to interests like arts or sciences or math or whatever. And what we do is we just shove needless amounts of information into our kids' heads, and that just leads to them forgetting stuff that they don't care about and them remembering things that they do care about. So I think that a kid who's interested in math will remember basic algebra over the summer, but they won't remember reading skills or stuff like that if they're not interested in it. And I think that that's just the fact of how kids work, and that's how we need to change our education system if we're going to fix that.
Well, Mike DeMarco, how do you make that kid who is interested in math but not necessarily interested in reading become interested in reading over the summer?
Yeah, so at Higher Achievement, we have our scholars learn in many different ways. We have opportunities to learn in traditional classroom settings where they take classes in math and literature and science and social studies. But we also have informal learning opportunities, opportunities to go to Smithsonian museums, go to the Japanese embassy, go to architecture firms, and see learning in different environments. And so I totally agree that the summer is an opportunity for a more unstructured learning and fun, and opportunities for scholars to explore their interests and then go deeper in that.
All right. Thank you very much for your call, Tom. We'll move on to Vivian in Reston. Vivian, your turn.
Hi, Kojo. I love your show.
Thank you.
I'm so happy to be on the air. I'm a very passionate parent and educator. I teach theater and Shakespeare and improv and languages and a bunch of things to kids. And my quick comment is that I understand learning loss during the summer. I witnessed this in my child, who is always one of the youngest children in the class, so it's especially noticeable in her. However, I strongly believe that the summer should provide a big break to children, because we can't turn them into little math workers. They got to break free from the structure of class and roam around and have fun and play. And learning should be a part of that, but they also need that big break for their learning and growth as well.
Well, thank you very much for your call. Obviously, a lot of people in Maryland agree with you that summer should be summer and that it should be a long break. But, Kate McGee, that brings this issue up. What are the historic roots of summer breaks for students?
Sure. So it's traditionally believed, people refer to that school summer break was given for the agrarian calendar. But, it was actually in more urban areas. School was in the mid to late 1800s. School was all year round, and in rural areas, students would really take the breaks in spring and fall to help with the kind of traditional farming things that needed to be done at home. And urban school districts started in the late 1880s. Attendance wasn't mandatory at school, so there were large periods of time when kids wouldn't show up, and so there started to be questions about whether having a year-long calendar was worth it if kids were, not coming all the time. And so they reimagined the calendar around having a summer break, because in lots of urban areas, wealthier families were taking vacation at that time. They were escaping the heat of urban areas, going out into on long vacations, and they really pushed for the summer break, and that's how that was reimagined, and then kind of rural areas followed suit.
Got to take a short break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation on Summer Slide, Combating Education Loss in the Summer. But you can still join the conversation by calling 800-433-8850. If you're a parent has finding and paying for summer educational and recreational activities for your children been difficult, a financial burden, give us a call, 800-433-8850. Shoot us a tweet at Kojo Show, email to kojo@wamu.org, or go to our website, kojoshow.org. Ask a question or make a comment there. I'm Kojo Nnamdi.
Hi, it's Diane. The next meeting of my book club is on Wednesday, May 31st at 1 p.m. Eastern. I'll host a discussion of Mad Honey by Jodi Picoult and Jennifer Finney Boylan, followed by a conversation with the authors. Find out more and register at dianereem.org/bookclub.
Welcome back. We're talking about Summer Slide, where kids lose some of what they learn during the school year and ways in which to combat that. We're talking with Megan O'Connor. She is the Assistant Director of Programs and Partnerships for DC Public Libraries. Mike DeMarco is Chief of Programs for the organization Higher Achievement. And Kate McGee is an education reporter for WAMU 88.5. Mike, another concern during the summer is that young people often have less physical activity, which can lead to weight gain and health problems. How does your program deal with that?
Yeah, so research shows that kids actually gain weight at twice the rate during the summer as they do over the school year. So, we often have an idyllic vision of what summer looks like, that kids are out running, climbing trees, going to camp. And for many kids, that's not their experience. I mentioned before that the average cost of summer programming for families who pay is $288 a week. And so for many families, that's not realistic. And at Higher Achievement, we offer a program for free to our scholars. And our scholars are able to come and take classes in, like I said, math, ELA, science, and social studies. They're able to, take academic risks to meet that need that's all youth need to meet, and have time for structure of having different elective activities, including dance and soccer and basketball, as well as having meals. And that's something that we don't think about a lot, but 5 of 6 students who qualify for free and reduced meals during the school year are not able to access that over the summer. And for our scholars, they know that they're going to be able to have 2 meals at Higher Achievement in addition to opportunities to be up, engage with their peers, but then also run around.
Megan, how does the library incorporate physical activity into its youth summer programming?
We also host summer meals in partnership with DPR, which is a great way to make sure kids have access to nutritional food all summer long. And we incorporate some physical programming. We have a partnership with a great Double Dutch group that comes in. They show off their skills, and then they invite people to participate. We're also part of a district-wide government group that looks at how we complement our summer programming throughout the summer so that we're pushing DPR's programs, DPR is pushing our programs, and we're making sure that every kid knows what they have available to them to make it a great summer.
Well, there is at least one of our listeners who disapproves of what's going on in libraries these days, and that is Roger. Roger says in an email, "Reading is a solitary activity requiring concentration and attentiveness. Anyone who has visited a public library in recent years will notice that it's essentially a noisy daycare center. Kids are playing video games on the computers. Adults are using the libraries to conduct private tutoring services. People are engaged in loud, animated conversations. Gone are the days of shh, quiet, please. Others are reading." How would you respond, Megan?
Well, I think it's true that libraries more and more are becoming community centers and hosting many different types of activities that are important to the people in those communities. We, too, try and design our buildings to have spaces where if you're looking for that solitude, and I'm personally that kind of reader, so I understand, that those spaces, we try and build them in. But in general, we're following the needs of the community. And if a kid's going to learn how to read by sitting down and reading out loud to a dog, which is one of the programs we offer, that's the best way for them to learn, and we're going to support that.
A lot of people would like to join this conversation. Here is Judy, who is east of the Anacostia. Judy says, Judy, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Yes, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Judy.
I am east of the river, Koto. I listen to your show every day.
I appreciate
that.
And I think
that you're doing a wonderful job. You and I know each other from Howard University in the School of Communication.
Oh, I know exactly who you are, Judy. Go right ahead.
Okay. I am east of the river at 29th and Pennsylvania Avenue, and I work in a community center where I help to tutor kids in elementary school.
Yes.
And during the year, and have been very discouraged by the school's content and information and challenge that they give the kids and lack of follow-through. I'm now working with the community center where, along with me, another teacher has started a reading book club for the kids. And what we've observed at the school that is close to us is that there are a lot of field trips, but not content and not learning that's going on. And so, and there are so many holidays and breaks that the students, the continuity in learning.
Well, allow me to have Kate McGee respond to that. Have there been any significant complaints about what actually takes place in those schools that are having extended summer sessions?
Not so far. I mean, this is the first year, so there's still, you know, time to kind of review that, you know, the curriculum. It's, you know, it's still the DCPS curriculum that they use in their other schools as well, but it's just, you know, extended for additional either remediation or enrichment. I think, you know, there's always the question of standards and in school curriculums and, you know, what amount of rigor students should be having, especially for struggling students who might be behind on grade levels, and how you kind of manage those standards and create rigor while also meeting a kid on the level that they're at. And schools struggle with that every day.
On now, thank you for your call, Judy. On to Angela in Tacoma Park, Maryland. Angela, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, I enjoyed your show. And I have comment for the during the summer, if the parents or somebody can teach them continue math, light work, or buy the books from the store and they can practice, they will be glad. When they go back to school, they are lift elevator up.
Indeed, there are people who try to, in their homes, make up for summer slide by instructing their kids or giving their kids math problems to do and the like. So I'm pretty sure that's a highly commendable activity, Angela. Thank you so much for your call. On now to Zach in Washington. Zach, your turn.
Hi, Kojo. You're the best.
Thank you.
I just want to say that one of the things that really inspired me to go into, you know, to really be passionate about lifelong learning and to go into a STEM field myself was a genuine interest in problem solving and a curiosity about the world that my parents inspired in the time we were able to spend together over the summer. And on the aspect of physical activity, I just want to make a plug for interest in the natural sciences and the natural world, because I think things like hiking and bird watching are great ways to inspire curiosity about the world. And really get some physical activity during the summer.
I'm
as well.
Glad you mentioned that, because Mike DeMarco, I was about to ask you, what are some of the ways for keeping youth engaged outside the classroom in learning during the summer?
Mm-hmm. So at Higher Achievement, we like to take our scholars out of the classroom, because learning doesn't just happen in a seat. Often more learning happens outside of a seat. So, for example, one of the things that our fifth grade scholars do as part of our social studies curriculum is doing community asset mapping, where they will take a walk around their community. They'll examine what assets are here, where's the library, and map that, and then consider what would their ideal community look like. And so that's one example of ways that our teachers will take our scholars out of the classroom to examine what the content that they're learning in the classroom.
On to an email we got from Anne. As a parent with kids in Prince George's County Public Schools, I'm tempted to send my summer camp bills to Governor Hogan. I have to work, and I don't have family in the area on whom I can rely. Needless to say, we are spending our rare summer vacation far away from Ocean City. So I guess in Maryland, Kate McGee, there are those who beg to disagree with the governor.
Definitely. I think that a lot of parents, especially, you know, as working parents, as this listener is, you know, are struggling to find ways to keep their kids occupied during the summer so they can work and be able to, you know, pay the bills while also keeping their kids occupied.
Megan, as a librarian, how do you recommend that parents keep their kids reading during the summer?
Well, as the parent of a six-year-old, I feel people struggle. I actually really do use our reading incentive program, and my son knows that once he gets to the four-hour mark, we can go into the library and he can pick up his prize. He's really excited to earn his tickets to the Nationals ball game, and that every night we talk about, all right, how many minutes did you read today? This year, for the first time, we're only counting what he reads to us instead of what we read to him, which is a big leap.
And that's pretty cool. On to Shane in Arlington, Virginia. Shane, your turn.
Yes, sir. I just wanted to also bring out what your email said. Just as a parent of three children and a dual working household, like it just seems like a lot of this could be possibly alleviated by, I mean, extra summer programs that are affiliated with the schools that are a little bit more, I guess, with the schools in that regard, sir.
Care to comment on that, Mike DeMarco?
Sure. I mean, that's a big reason why we exist in the summer. Our parents want, like any parent and the parent our callers want, structured time and structured activities where they know that their students and kids are going to be safe and learning and progressing and preventing that 2-month summer slide that Kate talked about before.
Kate, many countries do not incorporate summer break into their school years at all, and in many of those places, students seem to be doing better academically. Is there any push in the United States to do away with summer vacation?
I think a lot of, as I mentioned earlier in the program, as, you know, this nationally with this push for high-stakes testing and closing the achievement gap between high and low-income students, schools across the country are reevaluating their calendars. This is something that extended year programs in D.C. here and across the country, extended year programs are something that has started really with charter schools. They had a more flexibility to kind of try some of these things out. And so extended year is common in a lot of charter schools here in the city. And nationally, it's definitely becoming a push that I think lots of traditional public schools are looking at as they try to deal with this issue of learning loss. So yes, I think this is something that's a national push.
Here's John in Maryland. John, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Yes, thank you very much. Great show, as always. This is my first call, so if I get stammering, just straighten me out.
Yes.
As your last guest just mentioned, charter schools have often used longer school days, longer school weeks, longer school years, and they have been particularly effective with lower-income students. In New York City, I work with someone who did a research project on the effectiveness of charter schools in low-income communities, and the two most successful programs, KIPP, Knowledge is Power, and the Harlem Children's Zone, all used a longer instructional time frame, and by using longer,
and I guess
more instructional time, they were able to incorporate some of the enrichment programs that your other callers have talked about.
And indeed, that's one of the reasons, Kate McGee, that the D.C. public school system is looking at extending school during the summer.
Right. And I think that, you know, lots of, as charter schools, as the caller mentioned, have started to do this, I think that one thing that beyond whether it's a charter or a traditional public school looking to extend the school year or have, you know, longer, more enrichment programs, studies show and studies say that those programs need to be high quality and they need to be with high quality teachers. And so even though you might have an extended year program, but that extended year program needs to be of muster. And so that's also something that schools need to consider as well.
Time for one more call. Eugene Williams in Clinton, Maryland. Eugene Williams, why does your name seem so familiar to me?
Hello there, Kojo. You know, I work with your boys there at Dunbar High School.
That's why your name seems so familiar to me. What are you up to now, Eugene?
Well, 75 years old now, and I'm reaching out to parents. One of the things I have done, and I'm giving away some of these books to parents, called It's a Reading Thing, Help Your Child Understand. And the reason that this book is going to be very effective for young people is that there are stories about kids from the D.C. public schools and how their parents helped them to become successful readers and high SAT scorers. I also just...
You only have about 30 seconds left, Eugene.
You need to... Teaching a Vocabulary of Hope. I want you to Google that. Teaching a Vocabulary of Hope, and you'll find out a little more about Eugene.
Okay, Eugene Williams, thank you very much for your call and for your help in educating my kids. But we've come to the end of this segment. Mike DeMarco, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Mike is Chief of Programs with the organization Higher Achievement. Megan O'Connor, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Kojo.
Megan is Assistant Director, Programs and Partnerships for D.C. Public Libraries. And Kate McGee, always a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Kate is an education reporter at WAMU. WAMU education coverage is supported in part by American Graduate Let's Make It Happen, a public media initiative made possible by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, a Food Wednesday conversation about how Washington's dining scene is reflecting Washington's economic and racial inequity. I'm Kojo Nnamdi.
WAMU 88.5 is your listener-supported NPR news station in the greater Washington, D.C. region. You can support the Kojo Nnamdi Show and all the regional coverage you value by becoming a member today. Click the donate button at WAMU.org, and thanks.